Let's begin. This week's parsha is Bahalotcha. In Chutz Laaretz, apparently they will never catch up with us. It could well be, and even people that don't really believe Mashiach is coming tomorrow, it could well be that Mashiach will come before they catch up with us. I'm just saying, on a realistic level. So this week is Bahalotcha. Bahalotcha, we've spoken many times in the past that everything in Sefer Bamidbar is focused towards, I would say, something good. And then, let me back up a little bit. Sefer Bamidbar is a book where things don't work out. We end up wandering in the desert. And we have all these chapters in it, all these episodes in it, which are unfortunate episodes, which sort of in our minds blend one into the other. They complain about this, they complain about that, and then there's a rebellion, and then there's this, and then there are the girls, and then there's lots and lots of mistakes, and lots of sin, and lots of wandering, which basically the book is a book which was an unnecessary book, because we shouldn't have had this book. We should have left Sinai and gone straight to Eretz Israel. That should have been the itinerary, and it seems like we've had the kind of cab driver instead who's just taken us around for 40 years, and we did not get to where we were supposed to get to, and we never get there. The book does not end up with us going the right way we're supposed to go. So those of you who want to remember when things go wrong, at which point they go wrong, it's the beginning of chapter 11. I don't know if that's what they had in mind about chapter 11, but that's it. Now you're going to remember this now, right? Where do things go wrong in my midbar? Chapter 11. So that's how you can remember this. So I want to actually talk about something a little bit beforehand, which is a law, or it could be a little complex, a cluster of laws, which are, we can decide as we move on today, if it's something which is actually really uplifting and hopeful, or something which is disturbing, or maybe even a combination. But enough introduction, let us begin. Source number one speaks about Pesach Sheni. Now, when I say Pesach Sheni, there's actually two Pesach Shenis, and this is both. Right? So this is Pesach Sheni squared, or I guess. Yes. Why? Because this is the second Pesach, so this is Pesach Sheni. Okay? On top of that, we're going to see that there are people who, for whatever reasons, are excluded from being involved in Pesach Sheni, and therefore they want a Pesach Sheni. By the way, there is a phrase, a term for Pesach Sheni in the Mishnah. Those of you who want to test your guests who will see themselves as being Talmudic scholars, and it's called in the Mishnah twice. It talks about Pesach Sheni and never calls it Pesach Sheni. It's Pesach Katan. It's a small Pesach. If you want, one will obviously be in the context of Pesach, but the other one is if you're looking for it, look at the end of the Mishnah. If I'm not mistaken, Chala, very last Mishnah. We'll talk about Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni or Pesach Katan compared to Pesach Gadol, obviously. So also looking for the term Adar Sheni is not as easily found as some of you may think. Okay? So, V'deber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shana ha-shenit l'tzeitam mi'eretz Yisrael b'chodesh ha-rishon le'mor. And God spoke to Moshe in Midbar Sinai, so we have location, in the second year, from when they left Egypt, in the first month. So it's interesting that in this case, it does not give us the date. There have been other times that it's given us the precise date. This only tells us the second month. The only thing that we can guess about the date that's given over here, or this particular date, is that it's probably before the 14th of the month. And the reason why I say probably is because we're about to have instructions what to do in the 14th of the month. Now, if we remember last year, the last year for them, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the first month, on the first day of the month, is when we had that parsha HaChodesh Zelachem. And we talked about time, and then we talked about the first Pesach, not Pesach Sheni, Pesach Rishon. And not just Pesach Rishon, the first Pesach Rishon. So, which makes it Pesach Rishon. So, that was given on the first day of the month. It's hard for me to guess, it's impossible for me to guess exactly what day it was. Perhaps it was the same day. The Jews should do Pesach in its proper time. Mo'ado, I'm translating as time, in its proper mo'ed, in its proper occasion. I guess that would be a good word. In the 14th, in the evening, ta'asu oto b'mo'ado. Now, you notice the word moado has been stressed over here already twice. Do it in its right time. And then again, tasu oto bimoado, do it in its right time. So again, in case we would have thought, which would have been a mistake, but in case we would have thought that Pesach was just a one-time thing, and the reason I say that would be a mistake, was already told in Perek Yud Bet, in the very, very beginning, that this will be done on a continual basis. Although we have to be a little bit careful, because it's not really clear in Perek Yud Bet. You're going to go back and read it, and you'll decide if it was talking about every year afterwards or only when they get to the land of Israel. Because it actually specifically says, when you get to the land of Israel, you're going to keep this chukah, you're going to keep this law, you're going to be doing this all the time, which actually leads to a really good question. So were they obligated to do the Korban Pesach the whole time in the desert? Now, I'm not going to say anything more about this except for the following. There's lots of intrigue regarding what actually happened in the desert. There's a lot of reason to suspect that aside from the second year, they never did it again over the 40 years in the desert. One of the reasons for this is because they were traveling around. One of the reasons for this is because new kids were born. And one of the reasons is that when the new kids were born, they did not do Brit Milah. And therefore, there is this correlation between having to do Brit Milah and having the Korban Pesach. And they didn't do Brit Milah because they were constantly traveling, or the fear of traveling, or the anticipation of traveling. So they did not do the Brit Milah, apparently, during the time in the desert. And therefore, not only didn't do Brit Milah, they also didn't do the Korban Pesach. So as I said, there is lots of intrigue about this. When in history we've done it and when we haven't done it, but here we are told specifically to do it. Continue, Pasuk Dalet, V'deber Moshe el b'nei Yisrael asot ha-pasach, and Moshe then conveyed the instruction from God to do the Korban Pesach, the Pesach offering. V'yasu et ha-pesach parishon b'abasa yom l'chodesh ben arbaim in Mer Sinai. And they did it. It's actually noticed there's lots of words over here. There could have been a lot less words. Let's do Pesach again, right? Right, what are you doing for the Seder? Right, so Moshe invites. I mean, there's a lot, and let's continue. And they did it in the proper time. Let's read it again. Ve'yasu et Pesach Barishon Bar Sayom LaChodesh Ben Arba'im B'Midbar Sinai. So now you realize there's actually an emphasis there. B'Midbar Sinai. They in fact did it in the Midbar. K'kol Asher Tzivah Hashem El Moshe K'Nasu B'nei Yisrael, and they did it according to all of the instructions. Great. And then we get to Pasuk Vav, which will be really the topic for today and the problem. And there were people who were impure or spiritually impure, lenefesh adam, to the souls of people. I hope you also realize there's too many words. Maybe, we can argue. Could have said, ayu tmeim lenefesh. Ayu tmeim lenefesh adam. It sounds like a lot. And they couldn't do it. So just like I said before, that perhaps there were some people who couldn't do the Korban Pesach because of intrigue regarding the Brit Milah, over here we're told that there were certain people who were impure, they came in contact with the dead, and therefore they couldn't do it. And then they make the following complaint. And I use the word complaint, even though, as I said prior to this, that generally we find complaints in Bamidbar after chapter 11, or chapter 11 moving forward. Over here we have the following complaint. Lama nigra levilti krivat korban Hashem b'moado b'toch b'nei Israel. What does the word nigra mean? So it's like to subtract. Why are we excluded? Lama nigra levilti krivat korban Hashem. Why are we excluded and unable to bring the offering to God b'moado in its proper time? So again, we have this moado in the proper time b'toch b'nei Israel, among the people of Israel. So I do want to pause for a moment and speak a little bit about halacha, which we will inevitably come back to, unless I forget. And there is a severe punishment in Judaism, which is called karet. Karet literally means to be cut off. There's a whole menu of sins, those interested, right, of things that you can do to deserve karet. Virtually all of those things, with two exceptions, are breaking negative commandments, severe negative commandments. So there's something which would be severe, and somebody breaks that law, then the punishment would be karet. Regarding positive commandments are generally seen as opportunities of having a relationship with God, and therefore if you missed a positive commandment, so you missed a positive commandment, it's not like, okay, it's a missed opportunity. That's really generally all it is. I mean, it could be that culturally and religiously we see it differently. If a young man after the age of 13 didn't put tefillin on one morning, so he didn't do a sin. He just didn't fulfill a positive obligation. He missed an opportunity. That's And there's no real punishment involved. It's missing an opportunity to do something positive. You didn't do what God asked you to do. It's not a punishment, which means there's a real big difference between not doing something that you're asked to do versus doing something that you were told not to do. Yes? Is this true? Yes. So, yes, God works the same way. And some things that God tells us not to do are more minor, and some things are considered to be much more serious. So there are some things which are considered to be game breakers, which therefore will have the punishment of karet. So there's only two positive mitzvot, which if a person doesn't do them, then they would be guilty of karet. One of them is not having a circumcision, assuming the person's healthy and so on and so forth. Then that would be considered to be karet. And the other one is not performing the Korban Pesach, which I'm going to come back to, which obviously has to do with our topic. So if this were known, then the lack of performance of the Korban Pesach would be something which would be severe. Although I do want to point out, it would seem to me, and not just me, we'll see, others as well, although I will readily admit I did not do what I would normally. It was a short week this week. Did you notice this? I don't know what happened. Like you miss one day and that's it. I have a chavruta with somebody. He's in New York, and I'm here. We learn every Tuesday. For him, it's lunch, and for me, it's evening. So I sent him an email. He didn't even respond. You know, we're learning today. I didn't even respond. And then later at night, he goes, no, today was Monday. I said, no, it was really, no. He goes, today was Monday. So when you miss a day, it makes things, because he had 2 days yontif, so the first day that he was back was Tuesday, which was Monday for him. So that's it. It was Monday. So, you know, Monday, all the things that, you know, got piled up over the weekend. I mean, he's the CEO of a big company, so everything got piled up. He said, no, today was, he goes, I can assure you today was Monday. So we have these people who feel that they are disconnected. Now, what I was about to say before was that what I wanted to do, which I didn't do, but what under normal circumstances I would do, before I would say something like this, is I would have looked at every single verse in the Torah leading up to this point that discussed Pesach. And then I could have said with a great deal of confidence what I'm about to say. I don't believe that the punishment that one who does not do a Korban Pesach is punishable by karet, is cut off from the Jewish people. I don't believe it was ever mentioned before. I believe that the first time it gets mentioned is now. That's actually going to end up being something which is interesting. But just keep that in mind, that we see the lack of performance of Korban Pesach as being something which is severe, so that's introduced at this point. If I then have to find a correlation between the two, and I'm sure many of a rabbi's drasha or drashot have been involved on this point of what Korban Pesach and Brit Milah have to do in terms of peoplehood, nationhood, and why the lack of doing this causes karet. Maybe it's not even that it causes karet. Maybe that's just the reaction. That's just the response. If there are certain things which are expressions of nationhood, and if you do something to separate yourself from the nation, so it's not a punishment that you're outside of the nation. You have taken yourself outside of the nation. And it could well be that the first time that we sense this, again, Brit Milah, God essentially says to Avraham, this is going to be an identifying characteristic in terms of the Jewish people, and this is really the beginning of Avraham as Avraham. Before that, he's somebody else. Avraham converts with his Brit Milah. How do I know that? He changed his name. Before that, he was Avraham. Now he's Avraham. Not only that, somebody else had her name changed that day. And who's that? Sarai becomes Sarah, which means that's really, quote-unquote, the conversion process, but Avram has Brit Milah, changed his name, becomes somebody new, it's the beginning of the nation, is really at that point. So therefore, Brit Milah becomes this expression of the beginning of the Jewish people, and therefore somebody who doesn't do it, in a sense, is saying, I am excluded from this people, I am not part of this people, and therefore it's something which has seemed to be so important. It's also really quite interesting, and you know, who knows what the future holds, but even secular Israelis, even people that are not necessarily keeping other laws, you find an incredible percentage of Israelis who keep Pesach Seder and who keep Brit Milah. So, you know, as much as people want to say that maybe, you know, there's secular, I mean, I'm always amused when people use terminology like this. As far as I can tell, a lot of the people who are self-identify as being anti-religious Jews or more observant than I think certain Jews who consider themselves to be observant Jews who live in other places. I'll just say it like that. They tend to eat kosher and they tend to light candles Friday night and they tend to make Kiddush on Friday night. which is, of course, very interesting. And, of course, you have to love when the news starts on Friday night. You may not know this. When it starts, it says Shabbat Shalom. There's actually an opinion in, among the Rishonim that Kiddush is when you say Shabbat, when you recognize that it's Shabbat. And, therefore, it could be that all of the Israelis are Yotze Kiddush when the guy on television says Shabbat Shalom to them. So, no, I'm just saying is that sometimes, you know, we're very critical of ourselves. We give ourselves a hard time. I'm not saying that, you know, this is, again, this is our imperfect world, that sometimes we want things to be done by everybody in the right way. But let's just realize that sometimes the imperfection actually has a great deal of interest to us as well. But it seems to be that the first people who actually articulate this feeling that if we don't do the Korban Pesach, then we are, by definition almost, going to be excluded from nationhood by something which is very important, are these people who come over and, quote-unquote, complain to Moshe, because what they're saying is this was the birth of our people. Again, just like I can claim that the Brit Milah was the beginning of Avraham's identity as a Jew, as it were, and it becomes a new people, these people get separated or leaving Egypt, and their declaration of independence is really having that Korban Pesach and celebrating that day in Egypt 1 year ago, and that's really, in a certain sense, the beginning of them as a nation. And they feel if now we're commemorating that, this is going to be the 1 year anniversary, and we're commemorating our leaving of Egypt, how can we be excluded from this? There's something very wrong with us being excluded and not having the opportunity or the ability of keeping the Korban Pesach. So I'm saying that would seem to be the background, and I'm willing at this point to say it in terms of their perspective far more in a social or nationalistic terms than see it in terms of purely religious terms. I really don't know what to do with all of the commentaries who will read these section or this section and these verses, and specifically this verse, in a hypo-halachic fashion, as if they knew all of the Gemarot, and if they knew all of the Rishonim, and if they knew all of the debate, halachic debate, regarding this point. It seems to be a bit anachronistic, because what they're really talking about, as far as I can tell, is nationhood. Maybe let's read the verse again to get a sense of what it is that they're saying. This was Pasuk Zayin. Vayomru ha'anashim ha'hema ilav, anachnu tmeim lenefesh adam. We are impure by virtue of being in contact with people who are dead. Lama nigra levilti hikrivet korban Hashem b'moado b'toch b'nei Yisrael. Why are we being excluded from bringing the offering to God in its proper time on this occasion, b'moado, on the occasion, b'toch b'nei Yisrael, from the midst of the Jewish people or with the Jewish people? So yeah, you can focus on the first, you know, the earlier formulation. We want to bring the Korban as well, but we want to bring the Korban b'toch b'nei Israel. We want to be part of these people. And therefore, feeling or the sense of being excluded from the people is something which they really feel, which is quite difficult. Vayomer aleihem Moshe, imdu ve'eshma'a ma'itzaveh Hashem lachem. So he said, essentially, and we're going to edit a little bit, that's a great question. You know, just like, wait and let me find out what God has to say about this. So once again, Moshe has humility, and Moshe does not know exactly what to do, and Moshe goes and asks, and is this something which God ever taught Moshe before? Is this going to be a new law which will now be introduced? The sense that we have from Moshe's response is that it's a new situation, something we had not known, it was not legislated to this point, and now a new law is going to come out. And v'deber Hashem Moshe lemor, and God says to Moshe, Daber b'nei Yisrael. By the way, notice when the people approach, who do they come to? In Pasuk Vav, it was Vayikrevu lefnei Moshe lefnei Aaron b'yamahu. They approach both Moshe and Aaron. Moshe speaks, and Moshe says, I'll find out. And then God says to Moshe, Daber b'nei Yisrael lemor, ishish ki atamei lenefesh, o b'derech hachoka. Anybody who, notice here, it's tamei lenefesh instead of tamei lenefesh adam. So again, that adam does bother us. Somebody who has been impure to a soul, o b'derech hachoka, or if they are distanced from the place where the korban we brought, lachem, ola dorotechem, this law will apply both for you and for the future. Vasa pesach lashem, right, and the pesach is made. Bechodesh hasheni babasar yom ben arbaim yasuoto. They will have the opportunity of doing korban pesach 1 month later. In the universities in Israel, there's something which is called moed bet. That if you miss the exams the first time, you get moed bet, a second time to do it. So what's the core, what's the source for moed bet? Pesach sheni. This is the source for Moed Bet. You miss the opportunity, you get to do it again. It was very difficult to create a university when you have male students, I hope this won't sound too sexist, but many male students who are off to the army, Miluim, could be called off a month at a time in the middle of a semester or during the exam itself. And you have female students who sometimes go off to give birth in the middle of a semester because the kids starting college are not 18. They're 22, 23, 24, and a little bit different stage of life. So this is just normal university for all exams to be scheduled, the regular one, and then Pesach Sheni, if you will. So it says that you'll be able to do this in the second month. Al matzot umarim yochluhu, which is a verse which maybe sounds very familiar. And when you eat the Korban Pesach, you eat it with matzah and mar. This is one of the sources for eating our sandwich. It would also be interesting, because we don't want to get too much into halacha, to check if that particular phrase ever occurred before, or if that phrase is only a Pesach Sheni phrase, which then may or may not impact Pesach Rishon. Pasuk Yud Bet, Lo yeshivu menu ad boker, ve'etzem lo yishberu bo, kol kechol chukata Pesach yesuoto. Without getting into too many details, do it the same as the first one. Va'isha shehu tahor, and somebody who was not tameh, somebody who was tahor, uvederech lo haya, and was not far away, right, on a trip far away from whatever far means in this context. V'chadal l'sota Pesach, and that person did not do the Korban Pesach. V'nichrata ha'nefesh ahimei ameha. That soul will be cut off from the Jewish people. So, you know, generally when people ask or discuss this section, they say, wow, this is really great, because based upon these people who are requesting this law, or requesting another opportunity, a whole new law is introduced. And what's the whole new law which is introduced? The new law which introduces, you get a second opportunity. But you have a very damning sentence over here. But if you didn't use, well, and we'll have to explain this. If you didn't do the Korban Pesach, you will be cut off from the Jewish people. And that's what I said before. As far as I know, that particular statement does not appear prior to this. That means that two things happened. One thing that happened is second opportunities, which is great, which is unbelievable. Other thing which happened is, this is so important that I'm giving you two opportunities, you mess it up, severe consequences. So it's actually the second opportunity and the severe consequences are really two sides of the same coin, even though when we look about this, we sort of take the karet as a given, and we see this as, oh, it's so severe, therefore there's another opportunity. But both of those sides, again, the severity and the second opportunity seem to emerge out of the request that they make. Again, ki korban Hashem lo hikriv b'moado, because the person did not bring the offering, again that word b'moado, in its proper time, which of course we now have to wonder what its proper time may be. Chet'o yisa ha'ishahu, and this person will bear their sin. Okay, let's pause here. Because there's a couple things that I want to try to work out. First, I want to get to this last point, and then we're going to go backwards. There is a discussion in the Gemara, and before I look at the Gemara, or we look at it together, I want to ask you all a question. Those of you who recall, on Pesach Sheni, do we say Tachanun or not? Those of you who don't know this, Rav Huttner once said that only those who are in shul, who are shulgoers, who on a Monday and Thursday, the gabbai, you know, gives a clap and says, right after Shmon Esrei, and says, Yiskadal v'yiskadash, instead of saying Tachanun, where there's a long Tachanun, I have to explain, there's a long Tachanun on Mondays and Thursdays. It was only people who go to shul and hear that clap, Yiskadal, know what true joy is in this world, right? There's no joy in this world for Jews as much as skipping Tachanun and going straight to, it's inexplicable. I can't explain why, for some reason, saving those, what is it, 2.5 minutes? Saving those 2.5 minutes makes somebody's day. This is like the greatest thing that ever happened. And Chassidim, who like to really be happy, so they try to find yahrzeits for all kinds of people, dead and alive, and saying that, and saying, oh, somebody's yahrzeit, we can't say Tachanun today. Don't say Tachanun today, because they need more joy in their lives. And there's no joy like a Jew who doesn't have to say Tachanun. So he loves Tachanun. He's a Litvak. He's a Litvak. Okay, he's not a Chassid. He's a Chassid. You should tell him what Rav Huttner said. And he's not a happy person, right? Okay, I'm kidding. So Do we say Tachanun? And this is almost heretical for me to bring this up, because I can assure you that in almost every single shul, they skip Tachanun. Now, why would you skip Tachanun in Pesach Sheni? Well, you would say because Pesach Sheni is a holiday. But is Pesach Sheni really a holiday or not? So just, what is it so far? It's a makeup date. It's not a holiday. It's a makeup date. So let me ask you a question like this. If the Beis HaMikdash were built between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, would you bring the Korban Pesach by Pesach Sheni? Oh, that's the answer. Okay, let me ask you a different question then. If any kid who has a bar mitzvah during that time, right, then the Dvar Torah always going to be, oh, if you started saying the Sfira Ta'omer beforehand, then you become bar mitzvah, you continue saying it with a bracha. That's right. That's right. You get to go like this and raise it. So that's what kids always talk about. And if the kid doesn't talk about it, then the rabbi will talk about it. But what if a kid was born between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni? Does he bring a korban and Pesach Sheni? Which means, even if he ate, by the way, even if he ate the korban Pesach and Pesach Rishon, does he bring the korban Pesach Sheni? What if somebody converted between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni? Does he bring Pesach Sheni? Which means what I'm really asking you is Pesach Sheni a makeup date for having missed Pesach Rishon, or is it something which is independent of it? And all of you who have all these answers, it's not as simple as you think, because those of you who study halacha, certainly study halacha with me, will know that the right answer to every question is it's a machloket, except for how many gods. Okay, there's one god, and past that, we argue about everything. So this is not a very simple point. A matter of fact, the Chazon Ish said, of course you say, but then again, he was also a litvak, but the Chazon Ish said, of course you say Tachanun and Pesach Sheni. It's not something of the tzibur. It's something of individuals. The individual who missed Pesach Rishon, he goes, by definition, it's something. More than that, who actually troubled the Chazon Ish with something else. There's a list of days that we're told you don't say Tachanun, and it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. In that list of days, it doesn't mention Pesach Sheni. So essentially, the Chazon Ish said, why aren't you saying it? It's not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Nonetheless, as I said, it brings so much joy to so many Jews, and I don't want to be the one to destroy their joy, and I don't want to be the one to tell them that, by the way, that most likely that's a mistake, and they should be saying Tachanun and Pesach Sheni. But let's look at this Gemara in source number 16. Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis taught, Chayiv Karet Ala Rishon, V'chayiv Karet Ala Sheni, Divrei Rebbe. So, missing the first one or missing the second one makes one subject to being guilty of something punishable by karet. So this association of karet with not having fulfilled the Korban Pesach is both for missing the first and the second. That's what Rebbe Rabbi said. Rebbe Natan Omer chayv karet ala rishon upator ala sheni. No. The only one that you're really guilty for is the first one and not the second, not missing the second one. Rebbe Chanina ben Kavya Omer, Afal Rishon in Chayv Karet Ella Imkein Lo Asata Sheni. And no, the first one you're not guilty for missing. You have two opportunities, only missing the second one. So essentially you have over here, and I don't want to go that much into this, but you essentially have three different opinions on what Pesach Sheni is. Or for that matter, what the relationship is between the two, or where the punishment of Karis is. Va'az de lo tamayhu. The Gemara says, and they each go according to their logic. Tatanya, because we have a Braita. The Braita says, Gershon et Gayer bin Shnei Pesachim. What if somebody converted between the two different Pesach, between Rishon and Sheni? V'chein katan shehigdil bin Shnei Pesachim. Or what if there was a kid who grew up, a boy or girl, who became Bar Bar Mitzvah between Pesach, Rishon, and Sheni? Chayev lasot Pesach Sheni divrei Rebbe. Rebbe said that they're obligated to do Pesach Sheni. Rebbe Natan Omer, kol shezakuk l'rishon zakuk l'sheni. Only if you had an obligation for the first one, you need to do the second one. If you were not obligated for the first one, which means it's a makeup date. You only can do the makeup as if you were obligated by the first one. You were not obligated by the first one, then you don't have the makeup because it's not a makeup for you then. Then it's the first opportunity for you. And he says, no, it's always a makeup and not anything else. Kol she'ein zakuk l'rishon, ein zakuk l'sheni. But my kamiflagi, What's the argument? Rebbe sover sheni regel b'fnei atzmo. Rebbe thinks that it's an independent holiday. Rebbe Natan sover sheni tashlum d'rishon hu. It's there to make up for the first one. Tikuna l'rishon l'matakinin le. Rebbe Chanina ben Akavya sover sheni takanta d'rishon hu. So, and I'm not, again, going into all explanations of the subtleties over here, but you realize there's an argument. Just quickly look at 18. This is a Yerushalmi, and it raises the question that I raised. Nitan li Yisrael levnot beit ha-bechira. If somehow the Jews obtained permission, I don't know from whom, to build the Beit HaMikdash, yachid osa Pesach Sheni ve'in tzibur osin Pesach Sheni. So here the opinion is that Pesach Sheni was only instituted for individuals. It was not instituted for the whole tzibur. So therefore, if the whole tzibur missed Pesach Rishon, there's no obligation to do a Pesach Sheni. It's only for the individual who missed it, which means somebody who potentially could have done it, but for whatever reasons couldn't, because they were Tamei or far away, and therefore they missed Pesach, but there was a Pesach Rishon to miss. Therefore, according to this opinion, if the Beit HaMikdash was built between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, there would be no Pesach Sheni in such a situation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tzibur Osa Pesach Sheni. He says, no, the Tzibur does do a Pesach Sheni, so now you realize that that as well is Machloket. And it could very well be, incidentally, that this issue of Tachanun may be dependent upon this particular point. Is it a holiday for a Yachid or for a Tzibur? That only if you argue it's a holiday for a Tzibur, for a community, would you then come to the point that even today maybe it's still something for the Tzibur. So let's, by the way, what we're missing in all this, and this will hopefully help us, what if not one individual was Tamei? What if everybody was Tamei? Then you do Pesach Rishon. Right? Don't say the positive. Then you do Pesach Rishon, because it's only if one person's Tamei you don't do, but if everybody's Tamei, then Pesach wins. You don't know why this is, it's okay. So now let me go back to what may be a more basic question, but nonetheless, the Gemara was concerned about it. Who are these people who approached them, and what exactly was the argument? I've been putting the whole thing in nationalistic/religious terms. They feel excluded from the Jewish people in terms of celebrating the holiday. And I'll say it again, it's nationalistic religious terms. I mean, the other thing about living over here, so yeah, this could be a long story, so I'm going to cut it as short as I can. But when my grandmother and her parents moved from Russia to America, so this is a long, long time ago, this is probably close to 100 years ago, when they moved, my grandmother had an older sister who was married. And this is during, if you figure Russia 100 years ago, so we're moving towards the Soviet Union, communism, and so on. And that generation was in contact. At some point, that generation died off, and we sort of lost contact. And we found out much later, they got into a lot of trouble for the letters that went back and forth. They were suspected of all kinds of things because they're getting letters from America. But my great grandmother, before she passed away, she said to her children that if they ever hear from her other daughter and their children, then part of the will should go to them as well. That she's putting money aside, they can use it. But if there's ever contact again with them, then they should give them. So then, many years later, my great uncle gets a phone call, and a message on his phone machine. Hi, my name is Igor. I'm your nephew. And then, of course, my mother's cousins are arguing. He heard about the money. I don't know who this guy is, but he heard about the money. By the way, we're not talking about a great deal of money over here, okay? So that's it. He heard about the money. And anyway, Igor ended up making it to America, and they're looking at him. I don't know. He doesn't look like he's related. I don't know. This can't be. And anyway, Igor ended up making it. Igor today is Shomer Shabbos. And again, long, long story, but Igor's mother and siblings ended up making it to Israel. And again, over the years, when the walls come down and they came, and they actually live near my sister up north. My brother-in-law decided for some reason, after growing up in a secular Jewish home, after seeing Fiddler on the Roof, he felt a connection to Judaism, and he changed his major in college to become a Jewish studies major, and he took classes in Yiddish just because Fiddler on the Roof. Okay, and there he was, the only person in the town that he lived that spoke Yiddish, and he worked for the municipality and became involved in absorption when all the Russians started coming over, and lo and behold, this whole part of the family that we'd lost touch with years and years ago ended up coming over, but they did not become religious. But talk to whatever, they all keep Yom Kippur. Why do you keep Yom Kippur? Because it's an Israeli holiday. nobody eats on Yom Kippur. It's an Israeli holiday. But you're going to say, no, it's religious, but Pesach is an Israeli holiday as well. You can't, I mean, I would even go so far as to say that one of the most holy things of the whole year is eating cheesecake on Shavuos is an Israeli expression of the holiday, which we can argue about. Anyway, let us then continue. He was treated with a great deal of kinship and friendship. He lived in our home for months when he came. And if you look at source number 6, the Chizkuni writes, "Lama nigra? Why should we be excluded? Lama ein anu rishaim lachol kadshim betum'ah? Harei eshtakad achalnu ha-pesach b'mitzrayim afilu betum'ah. V'hatam shadayim lo huzharu." So this is a really good question that they pose. They said, last year we were still in Egypt. We were, you know, in the belly of the beast. We were in the midst of impurity. Egypt is described as a place of impurity, a place of idolatry. And there was, everybody was tameh last year. Nobody went through any kind of religious procedures, right? So why this year are we excluded? Last year no one was excluded. So that's the way the Chizkuni reads it, and then he gives the answer at the end. Well, the law about the Tumah was not introduced yet at that point, so it's not a so maybe it's a fair question, but that's how he leaves it. This foreknown source number 8 writes, Anachnu tmeim lenefesh adam lama nigra, me'achar shahita tumotenu lidvar mitzvah, Lama tiyeh goreret arveira. We were involved in the performance of a mitzvah. Somebody was tamei met because they did a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? They were involved with the dead body. They took care of the dead body. They did something with the dead body. They buried the dead body. They carried the dead body. So why in the world would our performance of a mitzvah come to this point of being excluded from the people, which is a really powerful question. So again, you really have to, and the way that he phrased it, lama ze goreret avera, because they're seeing, and this is again how they feel, that the lack of performance of the Korban Pesach is a sin. So again, generally, I'll say it again, generally the lack of performance of a mitzvah taseh is a missed opportunity. But in this particular case, the lack of performance of the Korban Pesach is seen or perceived by them, in the words of the Sforno, as being a sin. There's something which is missed over here, but it's not just a missed opportunity. It's almost feeling, it's feeling that they're excluded from the people. So I'm purposely avoiding the process of what they needed to do and when they needed to do it, because of you, we'll look at source number 9, which happens to be the next source. The Gemara in Sukkah is talking about ha'usik mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So this was like generally dealing, the Mishnah here is dealing with all these people who are not obligated to sit in the Sukkah, people who have other obligations at that point. So they would be absolved from the obligation of being in the Sukkah. But this is where the discussion of osik b'mitzvah patur mitzvah. If you're involved in one mitzvah, you don't have to do another mitzvah at that point. Why that works and how that works is also subject to a great deal of halachic, I won't say debate as much as explanation, which is necessary why this is the case. So we're jumping in the middle of the Gemara. It says, Mehatam Nafka, you learn it from there. Sorry, Mehatam Nafka is learned from this case. The Tanya is we learned in Braita. But Yena Shem Asher Ayub Tmeim LeNefesh Adam, and so on, which is the verse that we were reading. Otam Anashim Mihayu. Who were these people? What is their identity? So the first answer the Gemara gives, which this is one of the 1,000 examples I have of this, I'll tell you what it is in a second. No se aronosha Yosef hayu divrei Rabbi Yosi. So I keep finding people talking about, with the same names, talking about the biblical characters. So Rabbi Yosi says, who was it? It's the people who were carrying the remains of Yosef. Yosef was carried out. Yosef, right? Moshe was one who takes him, and then there's somebody who Moshe entrusts with Yosef's remains, because Yosef will eventually be brought back and buried in Shechem. So therefore, who were these people who were tamei? They're saying, we're doing this mitzvah. We're actually completing what Moshe began. How in the world can we now suffer the consequences that we can't bring the Korban Pesach when we've been doing something like this? Rabbi Kiva Omer, Mishael ve'el Tzafan hayu, shu asukim b'nadav aviyu. So actually, you notice what happens over here. This is our famous theory of conservation of characters, and or in this case, theory of conservation of dead people, because we know of both of those people having been dead. So therefore, right, Yosef and Nadav and Avihu. So we know somebody was involved in carrying Yosef. We know somebody dealt with Nadav and Avihu. Now, the Nadav Avihu is actually interesting. We'll get back to Dr. Stu's point, because Nadav and Avihu died, according to our understanding, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So we don't know exactly when God spoke to them. So if it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, then they should have had an opportunity by Yud Dalad Nisan, this is the same year, to have become Tahar. For that matter, the people dealing with Yosef theoretically should have been able to, although we don't know exactly what dealing means. So Rabbi Yosef says it was the ones carrying Yosef's remains, and Rabbi Akiva says the ones dealing with Nadav and Avihu. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Im Nosei Arono She Yosef, Ha'yu Kvar Yochum Li Taher. They already had enough time. Right? Im Mishael Vel Tzifan Yochum Li Taher. Ela Oskin Bemeit Mitzvah Ha'yu. No, they were the Chevra Kedisha, and somebody died. I mean, the Ritva actually says that. He doesn't even understand the other opinions. In source number 10, he says, Tmiya Milta, because this is really surprising. Mayhi de Mahadre Tanai Ba'otem Anashim Mihayu. Why are they even dealing with who they was? Vahalo Hayu Ra'ui. Isn't it going to be statistically the case? Bishishim Rebo, 600,000 people. Shiamutu Mehem Bechol Yom. Vyusham Tamei Meit. People are going to die. And therefore, there was a Chevra Kedisha that dealt with the people that passed away. And what even is this question? Why are we connecting this to Nadav Avihu, or why are we connecting this with Yosef? So I want to try to spend the rest of the time that we have today to try to understand this point and to try to hopefully understand this. If it's Nadav and Avihu, and yes, we're going to do this terribly out of order today. If you look at source 21, this is a commentary on the Zohar. Just in case you didn't get your daily dose of commentary on Zohar this morning. Vihine, it's the Perish HaRamaz al Zohar. Vihine nefesh adam ba'a benadav aviyu besod. Anachnu tumim lenefesh adam. And they're going back to Adam. There is this whole connection of Nadav and Avihu with Adam HaRishon. Nadav and Avihu, according to the Zohar at least, they were guilty of drinking wine. Right afterwards, Aaron gets told not to drink wine. Adam, according to the Zohar, the Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra, was grapes, because what kind of fruit do you consume that you get confused between Tov and Ra? Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra was grapes, and therefore Adam sins with grapes, with wine, and therefore, according to the Zohar, Noach tries to fix this, Lot tries to fix this, Nadav Avihu, the day the Mishkan is completed, the day that Aaron was brought to bring a Korban Chatat, which was a calf, to fix the sin of the golden calf, and the day that Am Yisrael were asked to bring a goat to fix the sale of Yosef, represented by a goat. So everything's being fixed on this day. Nadav and Avihu say, let's go one step further. Basically what they're saying is, if everything's being fixed today, let's just go bring Mashiach. Let's go fix the last sin that needs to be fixed still, and therefore they take wine, and they use wine, they use the grapes, and then they try to go in and to serve God coming from that place. But alas, it doesn't work. So therefore, the Zohar has this direct correlation between Nadav and Avihu and Adam. And therefore, what did we feel was a little awkward in that first verse when it says that Anachnu Tmeim LeNefesh Adam? We're involved still in the Tumah from Adam HaRishon. I mean, that's how the Zohar is understand this. Let's again in 21. Vine Nefesh Adam Ba'a b'nadav aviyu b'sod anachnu tvim l'nefesh adam. Or is that a little scary? That actually made sense just now? Okay. Uvizen avin ma'amar chazal, sh'ama mosh la'aron misinai ne'amar li what's that? Shehabayit atid litkadesh ba'adam gadol. That there would be the sanctification of a great person, v'sover hayiti, to Kashu Bei Kamai. Remember this whole thing that Moshe says, according to the way that Rashi understands it? Oh, this is what I said, this is what I thought. And he says that, no, I always knew that when there will be this sanctification of the Mishkan, it will be between somebody great, and I thought it would be either me or you, and it turns out that it was them, and they were greater than us. And as I said, Rashi cites this. And he goes on to explain over here, but Eicham Rahim Gadol Mimeni Umimcha. How can you say that they were greater than Moshe Aaron? Shemehim Are you shneim gdolim mimoshe mi'aron kol echad levado avalo mishneim aval inyan muvan b'mashamar nekinad revil yoyu besod nefesh adam. So what this is explaining, and just one second, the other one who goes in this direction as well will be source 19, which is Tzror Hamor, which is also somewhat of a Kabbalistic interpretation, which is long, and I'm not going to explain everything over here, but essentially what he's saying, look in around the ninth line down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 8th, where it's underlined, aval on page 4, aval she'latam heita amuka, ulechein nistapek Moshe bam. Really, these people were asking a deep question. The ones who said that we're tamei, v'zeki him amru anachnu asaknu b'mitzvah shetzivitanu. We were involved in the mitzvah that you commanded us, especially if it's those who dealt with another view. Kirbu su'u et achichem b'nei me'et p'nei hakodesh. They were told to remove another view from the mikdash. V'zeo nachnu tamim l'nefesh adam miyuchad. V'imkein eichav shar sheba avur shaskin shasaknu b'mitzvah Nigramia korban korban l'Hashem v'lo nase mitzvata pesach. Right? So there, again, that's the same idea, and that's why they're complaining, because not only did they do a mitzvah, they were told by Moshe to go ahead and do this. What he's going to end up saying over here is that based Nadin and Vihu were considered to be so great because they're the ones who ended up introducing a new law. Okay, I need to try to explain this. So I'm going to stop reading, and I'm going to try to explain what I'm saying, and then hopefully we'll get back to Yosef still. Nadav and Avihu tried to do something. So what did they accomplish? So now realize that, in fact, this is Nadav and Avihu, and that was one of the opinions. That was opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So there's something deep going on, which is what the Tzmor is telling us, and we're skipping most of the words that he wrote over here. But what's the deep thing which is going on? Because of Nadav and Avihu, a new law was introduced. What's this new law? Pesach Sheni. And you're going to say, hold it, what did Nadav and Avihu have to do with Pesach Sheni? Now you realize they have everything to do with Pesach Sheni, which means they came, and according to this approach, trying to fix something very, very deep. And what ended up happening is that what was introduced there was second opportunities, which means this idea of Pesach Sheni, and that in a sense is why Moshe is now turning and saying to Aaron, look, they're greater than we are. Because we only know about first opportunities, and look what they now brought down from heaven, this concept of second opportunities. And that's what Moshe sees as being so great with Nadav and Avihu. Not that they went in and brought the Ketoret, is that in this sense that Moshe already sees what's going to happen in the future. As I said, one can argue with this, because you could say, no, this wasn't introduced till this point. Moshe doesn't know it till this point. Moshe doesn't ask God to this point. And therefore, there's something which is really ahistorical about this approach, which is why I want to go back to the other opinion. The other opinion is that it was Yosef. Now, there's a long Midrash Rabbah. It's in source number 5, and we'll see how much of it we can read. This Midrash Rabbah is in Bishalach. Bishalach is when the Jews are about to leave, right? And they leave. They walk out of Egypt. And it says then, v'chamushim, they were armed. V'chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael, sha'olu muzionim, they went and they were armed. And the next verse is, v'yikach Moshe atzmot Yosef. Alava katuv omer, chacham lev yikach mitzvot, sheko yisru yosukim b'kesef izav. Everyone else was looking for money, u'moshe asuk ba'atzmot Yosef. And Moshe was looking for the remains of Yosef. Why? Because Yosef had said, he made them promise, that when you leave, you're going to take me out. Shenema v'yikach Moshe atzmot Yosef, and so on. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, Alecha nitkayem chacham lev yikach mitzvot. You're the one who is considered the wise person who goes looking for mitzvot. Yosef hayachayev la'aviv l'kavro mneshu b'no. Yosef went and he buried his father because that was his father and he was his son. V'ata lo b'no v'lo ben b'no. You were neither Yosef's son, grandson, or descendant for that matter. Actually, there's also something very deep over here. Who is he? He's from Levi. Levi is not a descendant of Yosef, quite the opposite. He's an antagonist of Yosef. According to the Midrashim, he's the one who said, Yomer Isha Lachiv, one said to the other, Shimon says to Levi, oh, look who's coming over here. They're the ones who plotted actually the sale. So therefore, there's some poetic justice over here of specifically somebody from Levi coming and being involved in the burial. V'kavarta oto, and listen to this, it says, V'chein ani she'ini chayev liberia, and God says, I have no obligations to anyone. The reason that God buries Moshe himself is because Moshe took care of Yosef. And God says, therefore, I'm going to be the Chevr Kedisha when it comes to you. I'll take care of your burial. Shenemar v'yikbor oto begai. The God buried him, guy. Uminani Moshe de Hechan HaYosef Kavur, and how does he know it? Yesh Om Serach Bat Asher. That some say, right, famous character. There's actually a fellow in my shul whose mother's name was Serach Bat Asher. I don't think it was the same one, but they do say she lived a very long time. Okay? Serach Bat Asher. Har El Tova Yakavur Ben Nilos Ma'asa Moshe, and you all know this part of the story, so we're going to skip a little bit down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. Vayikach Moshe tatzmot Yosef. He took the remains. Vayu otzmotav Yosef machzirim imam b'midbar rabim shana. And those remains were with the Jews for 40 years. Amar l'Kodesh Baruch Hu atar marit l'achecha anochi achachel etchem. God says to Yosef, you said to your brothers, I'm going to take care of you. Chayecha atan niftar. When you pass away, vayu atzmotach machzirim imam b'midbar rabim shana. And when you pass away, you will be with them for 40 years. Shenema yanashim ashayu tmeim nefesh adam ve'in adam eli Yosef. Shenema ohel shikan ba'adam uktiv v'yimas b'hol Yosef. B'schut atzmotecha him osim Pesach katan. Because of Yosef, they have Pesach sheni. So that's really interesting. Ki yishbeya hishbiya et b'nei Yisrael. Because he made the Jews promise. And they swore that they had no anger or hatred towards him. So let me go back. Let me go back and try to explain some of this. If the people were involved with Yosef, we read that opinion or we skip that? You have no idea what I'm talking about. If specifically, look at source 14. We did not read this. The Meshech Chachma. Lama Nigra, why are we excluded? Pirish. She'ikar inyan yitzietz mitzrayim haya yidei Yosef. The first expression that we're really leaving Egypt was said by Yosef. When? Vishbiya. He made them promise that when you lead, Pakod Yifkod Etchem. He said, Yosef was one who gave them hope. Yosef said, God is going to take you out. Velitim Atzmotai Mizem. When you go out, take me with you. So he understands, Hayitachen Sha'al Yado Nigrala Kriv Korban Hashem B'moado. So if the whole hope for redemption comes from Yosef, how can the celebration of redemption, the people who were carrying Yosef's remains, how can they be excluded from it? Should I try to say that sentence again? If the whole redemption, or the hope of redemption, comes from Yosef, how can the people carrying the remains of Yosef be excluded from this? But in a sense, the Meshech Chacham's question is great. He's saying, that's what these people are saying. We're carrying Yosef. How can we not be involved? Yosef is the first one who gave us hope that we're leaving. But I think that now, with this Midrash, we can say something which, to me, is both profoundly deep and obvious. You know, sometimes families get into fights, right? Sometimes we have become, as families, extended families, personal families, we are dysfunctional, right? We had a wonderful dysfunctional family in the past, and that was the family of Yaakov and sons, where one of their sons, they conspire to kill, to murder, and then they conspire to sell. And, I mean, it's the most horrific thing that one can possibly imagine. But Yosef says, I'll take care of you. Yosef says, Yosef says, forgive and forget. And he's sincere about it. Which means, who's a better example of second chances than Yosef? And therefore, the people who are carrying Yosef's remains can turn and say, listen, there's a rule in the Beit HaMikdash. There's a rule in Korbanot. Over zmano batal korbano. The rule of Korbanot is, you miss the right time, you can no longer bring that Korban. That's it. They have time limits. There are rules to all this. Even Korban Pesach, there's a rule. After a certain time, you can't eat this anymore. So how in the world, when it comes to a Korban, how in the world when it comes to Korban Pesach, could there be a makeup time? How can there possibly be, oh, you missed it, let's do it again anyway? And the answer is, according to the Midrash, because they're carrying Yosef. And Yosef gave them a second chance. Yosef made up with them. Yosef forgave them. So God then is essentially responding and saying, if you're going to behave that way one to another, if Yosef's going to forgive everybody, so then those who are carrying Yosef's remains will have a second chance. because this whole idea of Yosef is an idea of second chances, and therefore Yosef gave us help for the redemption, and therefore this becomes an expression of second chances. And therefore, of course, Korban Pesach, or Pesach Sheni, or Pesach Katan, as it were, gets revealed through those who carry out Yosef. Shabbat Shalom.